see the world.
Things dangerous to come to. Yeah. To see behind walls.
To draw closer.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Underrated Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss films that we feel are underrated, underappreciated, or those that have slipped under radar and passed most people by. This is a collaboration of friends, and together we are the Undercast Company. I am Ariel. I'm joined by, as always, by Derek and Alan.
What's up?
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
Today we're going to be talking about the 2013 version of A Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I say this version because it's the original iteration was a short story written by James Thurber and had a previous 1947 film starring the iconic actor Danny Kaye, who would start his daydreams with a tapaka tapaka tapakata. All of the versions are vastly different, but have over encompassing storylines, but all of them are stemming from the idea of an over imaginative man escaping his reality through his many fantasies. This film unfairly received a rotten score from critics, and while audience liked it with a 71% and a 7.3 on IMDb, this film deserves so much more. From the amazing dual performance and incredible directing from Ben Stiller, who in my opinion is an underrated director in himself.
Definitely, gotta agree with that.
Yeah, and an incredible cinematography. I mean, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. This film is such an incredible story of telling of how to regain yourself and how to truly live your fantasies. So I just want to start this conversation because, like, rewatching it for today, I'm like, I think this is my speed racer where I have no understanding why this movie does not get more recognition. It is such a beautiful movie. Its message is so touching. Ben Stiller is so transformative in this movie. You know, seeing him in the beginning and his journey at the end and just going on this journey with him. Having seen the original Danny Kaye movie, this one just blows that one out of the water. And like it's a classic. Like the Danny Kaye one is a classic, of that time, but this one just takes that idea and just creates such a deep story with it. And I just love this movie. I love this movie so much. And I think, to get it a bit personal, it's for me personally, I relate so much with Walter Mitty, especially with having to take on responsibilities for your family and kind of like side curbing your own, like, dreams and ambitions and stuff like that. And then you just fall into this rut of like, I'm just working. I love it. I love the work that I'm doing. But, you know, there is a part of me that wants to travel, wants to do this and stuff like that. And it's such an amazing movie. Like, it's, like I said earlier, the cinematography is so beautiful. The directing is incredible. Just like the seamlessness of going from reality to fantasy. Is amazing, and just how it transforms. Like, you know, the fantasies at the beginning are so fantastical, but then they start to become more real and real and real until his fantasies are his reality in a way, because he made it that way. He took this journey and he took that leap at, like, you know, like how the use of ground control to Major Tom or Space Oddity is used is essentially that stepping off point for him, and it's done so beautifully. And then you get that little wink, wink, hint to reference of Matrix in this, with the two different colored cars that he ends up with choosing in Greenland. For those, and it's very, it's very time time relevant to our time right now because the Matrix Resurrections trailer just came out 2 days ago. But if, for those who don't know, yeah, the Matrix, the famous red pill, blue pill. Blue pill keeps you in the simulation or the fantasy, and the red pill brings you out of the simulation to reality. And in that moment when he's asked, what color car do you want, red or blue, he chooses red for his reality. He's finally entering into this reality of his. Yeah, and I just
never put that together. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a blatant, like, nod to Matrix with that. And yeah, Ben Stiller, oh my gosh, he is so he's hot already, but by the end of this, he is hot. Like, he is so fucking hot.
Indiana Jones was the lead singer of, what does he say, Joy Division? I can't remember what
I don't think the Strokes. Of the Strokes. Indiana Jones.
That's so good.
And yeah, it's just like, oh man, Ben Stiller just does an incredible job on this. And like, yeah, like I said, like, Ben Stiller is very underrated of a director. I mean, Tropic Thunder is amazing.
The freaking
music video that he did for Jack Johnson Taylor is amazing too. It's so like cinematic. And
he doesn't do a lot of stuff. He's very choosy with the movies he directs, and yeah. I think for a good reason, because like, they're all bangers. Like, he directed Zoolander. Like, he's such a good director, and he doesn't get credit for it. Like, he doesn't get thought of as like this director who like this actor who turned director, like a lot of other, like Clint Eastwood does and stuff. Like, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves for that.
Yeah. And just going back to that ground, Space Oddity scene, that I think is like one of the greatest shots. Like, just you just feel it, you know, from the point of Kristen Wiig's or his imagination of Kristen Wiig's character singing this song. And her voice is so beautiful with it. And then them walking out of the bar, and then him just like there, she's like singing to him, and then it's like shot of like him, it goes around him, and then he like has this realization, and then of like, I need to do this, and he starts running, and then there's that outward shot, and all like the, oh, so good, and then he jumps on, and like, then that's where the Ben Stiller acting comes in, and he's like, like, a mixture of like, I can't believe I did this, and then also like, I'm doing this, you know. I love this movie.
No, yeah, it's like, because we were kind of talking about it for a little bit, Ariel, and when you were like, that's gonna be our next movie, I was like, yeah, fucking, I'm on board. I think I'd only ever seen it once before this, but like, I remember it just like really hitting me, and I was like watching it a second time, it did make a really, really big impact. Because I think this film really, a lot of the stuff you were saying, Ariel, like the themes are really resonant about him kind of being this daydreamer and kind of like having this, you know, and me being like a writer, that's the part I could relate to Walter Mitty a lot, is like having these kind of like big ideas and just kind of like, you know, but like not going on these adventures. And I was very sheltered for a long time too. And it wasn't until, you know, my like late 20s, my mid to late 20s that I started going out and going on adventures, and like, I'm like, you know what, fuck it, I want to go to Austin City Limits, so I'm gonna fly to Texas by myself, you know, like, fuck Texas right now, but whatever, but like, just like, heading out there, and just, you know, just kind of to go on these adventures by myself, going to Coachella by myself, you know, like, hey, maybe I'll die, whatever, you know. And and how he, I love the way that it uses kind of the language of film to kind of be like, yeah, these fantasies are becoming his reality, like you said. And you know, you have that moment when he jumps out of the plane, and like, he's like, he grabs the guy's like face, like, to, because you know, as an audience, you're watching this, and that sees mundane scenes, and they're shot very kind of like normally, and then it switches to kind of like way an action film is shot when he does his fantasies, and then the actual movie starts to switch that way too. So it's kind of telegraphing you that his real life is becoming like his fantasies, and as it goes on, the fantasies become less and less prevalent. And the only time it really slips back into it is like after he kind of gets shut down by Kristen Wiig, and he sees it, and it's just on the TV. It's little, and he's like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to let this kind of creep back in. And he like gets out of the cab and gets away from Conan. Those fantasies don't ever creep back up again. And I thought that was a really cool moment. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, like, they came back. Why did they? But I'm like, okay, it's because of this. Other stuff, too, like when they're, like, they talk about, like, oh, like, we'll see if these pictures will give him, like, give us a clue. And then it does that thing that movies do where it's like, okay, this is a picture of water. And now we're showing him sitting at the front by the water. And you're like, okay, like, that's just water transitioning to other water. But if you, and when you watch it again, you're like, that is literally the water that he was sitting at, because the next picture is Ben Stiller sitting at that same spot that he's sitting at trying to find it. So it's just like, oh my God, it tricked us. It made us think that this was just an ordinary shot and just a regular film transition. But no, and then it's right after that scene, Kristen Wiig is like, you know, hey, pay attention to the clues. And you're like, it was right there. And then, you know, the stuff where he's like, oh, my mom made this kind of cake. And it's like, oh, she made that kind of cake because he gave it to him. And he's like, brought it on the boat with him. Like, he went to and see his mom, and just all the little things that it's doing like that. It's such a brilliant film. And I think this film is interesting because it does have a 51%, like you said, on Rotten Tomatoes. But it is one of those movies where a lot of movies that have about that score tend to get middling reviews, tend to get like C's and like D's and like C pluses and D minuses. Whereas this one was just really divisive. People either like really didn't like it and just gave it a bad review, or they like loved it. It got on like top 10 lists, but it also like people were like, this is bad. And I think a lot of people who didn't like it, like the reason it's got like those half bad reviews was a lot of people comparing it to the other ones, I haven't read the original short story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't read the Danny Kaye one, and they're like, oh, it's very different from those. And I think that is something you run into a lot, where if something is different than its source material or what you've seen before, people will react negatively to it. Mm-hmm. Me, obviously, yeah, having never seen those, this is like my Walter Mitty. And it's just like, for all the same reasons that you said, Ariel, of it just being a story of like someone like coming into their own and like going on these great adventures. And like, he's always had this within himself. That's why he daydreams. That's why when he was a kid, he had a mohawk and he was just about to go to Europe. And then this, you know, his dad died. And it just, it's so good for those reasons. It's so good because of the way that it uses the techniques of film and just, you know, all these different things. It's a movie that I need to go back to more often, certainly. And I'm really glad we got to revisit it for this. You know, this is definitely a film that I think we've wanted to talk about for a while on Underrated, so I'm glad that we're finally getting to it.
Yeah. So to go back to the original short story, and then the Danny Kaye, I'll give you a little bit of insight. So the original short story takes place essentially over the course of an afternoon. It's essentially a husband who daydreams while taking his wife into town. It's an English town. It was written by an English writer. And his wife is essentially like berates him and stuff like that. So this is kind of like his way to like, again, like in all senses, leave a mundane life. And this life it's to him to escape. And he tells all these different stories to himself while he's passing like places in town and stuff like that. The Danny Kaye one it's very much of its time, in my opinion, where it's kind of like ties into like gangster stuff. Walter Mitty is a daydreamer and stuff like that. And then this girl and then her crew kind of like take advantage of him and like are trying to use him as a fall guy because he's not very paying attention anyway to things. So they're kind of tricking him. And it's very much of a time of that era. Funnily enough, the writer of the short story wrote a commentary piece on the movie and how much he disliked it because they weren't listening to him and his input, and that commentary was published in Life magazine. So I don't know if that's like a tie into what happens in this movie, but this movie, like, while it is different from both source materials, of course, like I said, the core is the same. It is about this man trying to escape his mundane life through his fantasies and stuff like that. But this asks so much more of a core question, like I'd say the original short story did. Because the original short story, you know, it's kind of a sadder point. Because he is escaping like a life with a pretty bad marriage and stuff like that, and just like wants more out of his life. Where, you know, that's kind of falls in the same line of Walter Mitty, but Ben Stiller's Walter Mitty, but added to that is this sense of like he had that opportunity, but he lost it because he had to take in responsibilities and he had to be the responsible one and take care of his family. So, and this is like his regaining of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll chime in.
Yeah, because Alan, you're between the three of us, you hadn't seen it before. Me and Ariel, big fans, so I'm curious to hear what you got to say.
I liked it. I'll tell you this much right now. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I loved the cinematography. I loved how crisp everything was. I loved how clean and gorgeous everything was. Like every shot, you know, every shot a picture, essentially. But I do feel, and I think I know why, it might have got that kind of rating, Rotten Tomatoes-wise. Did you guys ever see this movie called Don John?
No. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of it. It was playing at a movie theater, and I saw bits and pieces of it when I worked at the movie theater.
Oh, you mean the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt porn movie.
Yeah, it's a Don. Yeah. How does that play into this?
Well, give me a moment. So, pretty much... I feel with film is that people love to relate to the characters. I feel like people really enjoy being able to be like, oh, I'm like that character. I have that quirkiness. Or, you know, I'm a fucking, you know, I'm an archer or something, and I live in a dystopian society, and I have to go fight in this battle royale tournament or something. Like, there's something where people kind of relate to just a little bit. And with this movie, it reminded me of Don John, because with Don John, that movie is a solid movie. It has really good things about it. It's pretty funny. But one thing I found very shocking about it was that it was... This is primarily for men. It's almost too relatable. Like, some things get hit way too... Some things get hit way too hard on the head. Where it's kind of frightening. And kind of almost like... nerve-wracking, because when I went to go watch that, I watched it with my girlfriend, and we were in the relationship for like maybe, you know, a couple years, like very, very early, like 1 or 2 years, and there was just instances where I was like, you're literally saying all the secrets that men have. That movie was so open about a lot of things that men do in their free time, and you know, if you're a guy, go out and watch it, and you'll know exactly what I mean. Because it's like somebody reading your mind, almost. And with this film, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, I felt the same thing. Where there were so many instances where I was kind of like, almost angry. And kind of like, I got a very big sense of melancholy watching this movie. Because I was like it was like somebody was telling me, like not telling me, but they were proving me wrong. Like, they were kind of telling me and shoving in my face, like, this could be you, but you're the fuck up. You're the one who's daydreaming. You are the Walter Mitty. You are the one that has all these things going on in your life and da 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 and family and everything. Like, it just hits so many things on the head so hard where I feel like some people might be like, I don't like that. Because with film, people like to relate, but people don't want to be 100% about it. People don't want to be like, you know, because the thing is, they want to pretend they are the character. They want to believe they are the character, but they don't want the character to be 100% themselves, kind of thing. It's like, you know, watching all these superhero movies and stuff. Like, there's some things you can relate to some of the characters because you wish you were those characters. Like, you wish you were Tony Stark, because in your head, you're like, you know what, I think I'm a funny, quirky guy. And you see Tony Stark, you see... RDJ's, you know, performance, and you go, man, he's funny. I feel like I'm that guy. I feel like I'm him. Or you're kind of timid and kind of, you know, book smartish like Bruce Banner, and you go, you know what? I can dig him. I'm like, I can explode. I get it. But with this film, I feel like, because I'm a big daydreamer, and like you said, Derek, I also feel like I'm a writer myself. I don't write as often, excuse me, as you do. But I daydream a lot, and I do get caught up in daydreams a lot. And the thing is, there are some parts of those daydreams where you go, whoa, this is really hitting really close to home. And there was something about like the crispness of the film and the clearness that you just kind of go, this is just too real in an aspect. And then later on in the film where, you know, Walter Mitty finally dives in and goes, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to take those risks and I'm going to go in head first. And, you know, I'm going to go to Greenland, I'm going to go to Iceland, I'm going to find Sean and all that stuff. And it kind of upsets you a little bit. Like, it kind of, that's where the melancholy kicked in for me. Because now it gets even more real because it's like, now he's doing it. Because the biggest problem, the thing with people is, you know, I'm not trying to attack anybody. I'm not trying to, like, you know, like, bring stuff up or anything. But the thing is, with people is that people love to talk about what they want to do. People love it. They thrive on being like, yeah, one day I'm going to travel. One day I'm going to make all this money. Or one day I'm going to do this or that. But they don't do it. And that's the reality. And I think that's where maybe some people might have taken offense to it. This is just my personal opinion to it. But I did feel this sense of melancholy where, like, he's going out and he's doing all these things and it's all wonderful and stuff. And because the thing is, you know that there's people that do that. You know that there's people that kind of finally decided, you know what, dude, fuck this office job. Fuck working at this place or fuck working at McDonald's. I'm going to go dive in and I'm going to travel the world and I'm going to do what I want. And the thing is, you know, again, I'm not trying to attack anybody, is that people just love to live in that fantasy. They love to live in that daydream. And I think what it is that this film just kind of reminds you, like, hey, you can go out and do this. You can do this. But it also kind of reminds you at the same time that this is fiction. This isn't real. Because Walter Mitty just kind of goes, yeah, I'll pay $5,000 to get a penthouse to get a piano in there. And then I'm going to go travel the world to go find a picture.
That's the thing, though, is that because he has to go and travel, he loses the penthouse, he loses the piano. That's why they have to sell it.
So well, it's because he gets travel fired. The trip to Greenland was only $84. They make a point about that.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, like, it's traveling and going, like, I'm not going to lie, because I feel like the movie tries to kind of push a message to be like, hey, go out and do these things. Go out and live a life and go out and do all these great things. And all that, but at the same time, like, when I was watching it, I was like, Ben Stiller, I love you, but I'm poor. I can't do those things. I want to do those things. But I feel like maybe that's what it is, that some people maybe thought that they're like, I don't like this. Because sometimes some people just kind of delve way too deep into it, and they disturb themselves, and they upset themselves, and they feel like a sense of, like, melancholy, where they just go, because I won't lie, the same thing happened to me when I watched the Donjon. I just had this sense of melancholy where I was just like, that was kind of too real. Like, it kind of bugged me. It just kind of had this weird thing about it. And with this film as well, where, like, it's gorgeous, it's stunning, the acting, the effects, everything about it is great. But when I finished it, I was like, it's like, it kind of reminds you of a lot of things that you should be doing in your life. Especially,
but I think that's a good thing, right?
Well, yeah, it's a good thing.
It can motivate you.
Exactly.
It's just like your perception of where you are, you know, like.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's so divided. Because some people can just go in and be like, do you know what, dude? Fuck yeah. I want to go do that. I want to go travel. I want to do this. I want to be like it. But then there's other people who kind of get a little butthurt and just go, man, how fucking dare you? How dare you, like, do this? It's not like it's pushing the agenda or anything. It's just kind of like this kind of creeps in. Like, that's what happened to me. Like, I was kind of watching it and it was kind of creeping in where I kind of felt a little, I was like, oh.
I did feel it a little bit too. I did. I'm not going to lie. That same thing. But it was a good, it's good that I felt that. Yeah. I feel like, you know?
Exactly. It's kind of like when you get a lecture from a parent or something, or you get a lecture from somebody, hey man, you should probably change this or something. And you just kind of go, yeah, you're right. Like, I get it. I should, kind of thing. It's one of those things where I feel like, and that's the beauty and power of film that I absolutely love, is that it can inspire you. It can push you. It can make you do different things. Or some people just go, you know, hey, I saw this movie and it made me just go, you know what, dude, I want to go travel. I want to go do this. I want to go do that, kind of thing. And that's the beauty of it. That's just my opinion of why it was maybe divisive, is that sometimes some movies just hit the nail on the head way too hard where they go through and they go through the plywood and everything like that, and it just kind of hits you, and you're just kind of like, damn, okay, I get it, you know. I loved the movie. I absolutely loved it. That they're like, I just, the cinematography, everything about it, like yeah, I got that sense of melancholy, but at the same time I was just like, it's fucked up. But when he goes, yeah, I'm 42, I was just like, I'm 31, I got it, I can still make it. Because I feel also with a lot of people is that age is always this big thing where people just go, oh dude, I'm already in my 30s, I'm done with life, I can't do anything. Or they have kids, they go, oh, I'm done, man, I can't do nothing like that. But that, again, that's a mentality, and that's a message that the film is trying to get across. Is trying to say, dude, yeah, he's 42, he works at Life magazine, you know, he's helping out his family, but he can look at his adventures, look what he did, look what he accomplished, kind of thing. Look what he did, look at everything he's doing. And the thing is, it's another message of trying to say, hey man, you can do this too. Like, you just got to like believe in yourself, you got to go out of the way to just kind of put some things aside and be like, hey, you know, I can do this. But I feel like just that the certain kind of things that people can relate to, feel like maybe that's why it was upsetting for people, or maybe that's why they didn't like it as much, because I felt like the script was tight. I felt like the cinematography, the directing, the acting, everything was just outstanding. The only thing I think I didn't like was the fucking late 2000s music, which was used in every fucking...
Oh, no, man.
Oh, no.
No, you love us.
Oh, no.
Look, you took us. Look, I love late 2000s, like, you know, emo music and rock music.
It was indie. This is an indie rock. Fucking,
indie. Oh, exactly. My God. No, wait. I'm saying is some of that indie music where it's like, oh, like that one scene where he's like going...
Like, oh, fucking, Alan.
I didn't watch this movie today, and I was like, I'm gonna download this. I fucking disagree, Alan.
You had me going. All the things you were saying, and you took a hard right turn there. I'm sorry. I mean to cut you off, but I cannot disagree more. This is like a mixtape movie for me. Like, you know those movies that you're like, man, the fuck? This is like a level of Guardians of the Galaxy for me, like a Garden State.
This
like
is a level. Cool. Yeah, exactly. It's a level of Garden State for me.
But for me, though, see, the thing is that like, Garden State had great music, you know, like, you know, the Shins are going to change your life and all. But this movie was just like, or not the movie, the music, though, some scenes where I was just like, it was just being way too hard to be inspirational. Where I was just like, oh, come on, like, don't do this to me. Like, for me, it just made me cringe. I don't like that type of, like, let's use, like, late 2000s, like, indie music and be inspirational and kind of thing. Where I was just like, oh, did you, no, I'm sorry. Look, I love film. I love film to death. And, I'm very forgiving for a lot of things in film. But with music, though, I am very picky about that shit. Like, I love music. I feel like I'm a bigger music kind of like a person than film, because I listen to albums 24/7, and just hearing that music, I was just like, ew, stop. No way. Stop, no.
You're entitled to your opinion, but
yeah.
It's wrong.
No, yeah, absolutely. don't like that's okay. My thing. I don't, but like I said, I'm very, very picky with compared to like film. Like film, I always forgive a lot of things where I'm just like, hey man, a lot of people worked on this. But with music, I'm just like, I hate you. Why did you do that? Four buddies go out of your way and make this?
Like, I felt like, and the music also worked really well for the character and the character growth, because at the beginning, it's very kind of like quirky and there's some flutes coming in. And it's just like kind of like whatever, just kind of background music. But then it starts to get a lot more personal and a lot more like these big songs about exploration and like living your life and stuff like that. And that's why the music in this movie works. Yeah, man. Like, look at the difference between the needle drops in Suicide Squad, which are just in there because they're like, they mention New Orleans, so we got to have House of the Rising Sun, versus the needle drops in the Suicide Squad, which actually mirror the emotions that the characters are going through. This is the Suicide Squad. It's that same kind of, and it's also, there's such good songs. Like, this is like every fucking song in this. I'm just like, yes, put it on a mixtape. I was like thinking as I was watching this, like, I gotta like find that Spotify playlist that is the fucking this, because it's I'm really into that like garage rock revival, like like early aughts, like indie rock scene.
Don't get me wrong, I am too, but not this time. Like for me, this is like I call it the office indie music, like music that I feel like they would play in the show The Office or something.
That or literally like, no indie music was played like, on the show The Office, man. I don't know what you're fucking talking about. Like, I know.
It's basic. It's so basic. Like okay, all right, everybody listening, you're gonna. I'm the villain. Fuck The Office. I fucking hate that show. That show's garbage.
I know. I'm wearing, literally wearing an Office shirt right now. I know that you hate The Office. That's not even a thing that happened on The Office.
No. What I'm trying to say, it's so basic. It's generic. Like I love pumpkin spice, and I'll call myself a basic bitch for that. I love pumpkin spice stuff. I'm basic for that. But the thing is, the music in this movie was very indie basic. Like it was just so like just generic, like just so just late 2000s kind of like
Alan generic like in, The Office. Like, Alan coming in with the hipster vibes.
Oh my god. Yes, man. You're like one of those guys who goes to a fucking Radiohead concert and you're glad when they don't play Creep because you're like, everybody likes Creep. I'm glad they don't play that song.
Absolutely. I will take that to the fucking grave. I literally told so many people whenever
Radiohead, this is the song that made us famous. Radiohead for not playing that shit. Fuck Radiohead.
Look, I think Radiohead's fine. I donated my money for the album the 2000s where they're like, you can pay whatever you want. I paid full price for the album. I went out of my way to do it. But I think it's called In Rainbows. Creep, fuck Creep. I hate that song. It's so overplayed. I hear it on K-Rock every 5 seconds. 98.7. It's done. Like there's a point in time where like you know how some people like okay, like I love Doctor Who and all that stuff. And a lot of my buddies over time go, you know what, dude, I'm done. I don't need to watch it anymore. I saw a couple seasons. I got to a point where
smart,
I'm done.
Smart people. For me, smart people.
fuck it. Very smart because I keep going and I keep asking for more. But with Creep, I finally told myself, you know what, dude? I'm done. I don't need to listen to this song anymore. I've heard it so many times. And then just the other day, there was like a big like concert or something, and that Dave Chappelle showed up, who is one of my absolute favorite people in the world. I love comedy. He's one of my favorite comedians. I think it was a Foo Fighters concert, and he showed up, and he sung Creep. And I was like, you had me? And God damn it, I love you, Dave, but I don't fucking care for that song.
Look at The Killers, right? Brandon Flowers is like, people are like, oh, do you ever get tired of playing Mr. Brightside? And he's like, no, that's what the people love. Like, he's like, I'm not gonna like give my fans a middle finger and be like, oh, what, this song that everyone loves that made us famous, that like, that's why we are what we are today, we're not gonna play that for you guys. He's like, why would I do that?
But Derek,
Mr. Brightside is a fucking banger.
But Derek, The Killers are good. That's the thing. The Killers are very good.
The Killers are better than Radiohead. That's a fair point.
Exactly. Yes, they fucking way are. Like that whole first album destroys anything else that Radiohead's done. I'm gonna tell you straight up. I don't care. But anyways, I digress.
We're talking. Yes, go back to what?
back to the movie.
Like, what the fuck, you guys?
Because I can have a heated conversation about music, like way more heated than film, but I digress. I love the movie. That was a great film. I really recommend everybody go check it out. It's on Hulu. That's where I watched it right now. It's on Hulu, so go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I already explained many reasons why maybe it's divisive, but you know what? I think it's divisive because of the music, really. Fuck the music. I'm kidding. No, that was just my only gripe. I didn't care for the music on the nose to indie. Whatever. But other than that, great flick. But you guys go ahead. Take it.
Well, one thing I wanted to say, like kind of like segueing into, you know, talk about music, like me being like, I'm a pretty big music. I'm not as much as you, Alan, but like I do like love music and I love live music. And that's what I kind of talked about, like, how I kind of, you know, got out and had my Walter Mitty moment in my 20s, you know, was, you know, before COVID, I was just starting to go to festivals and I never saw live music until I was, you know, probably about like 19 or 20. I went to my first concert and, you know, then I went out there. And one moment that I really related to in this film is because it is about like pictures, like the like photography and all that is a big thing. And I'm also a like I try to be a photographer, like I'm, you know, an amateur photographer. And one big thing, like me going to all these festivals and having all these experiences, was like taking these pictures. And when Sean Penn is looking at that snow leopard and he's like, he just doesn't take the picture. And he's like, sometimes you just want to have the moment for you. I can relate to that, because when I'm in a like festival and I'm like, you know, I just will put my phone down sometimes, but like, you know, there's not, I'm not going to take any pictures during the set because I want to experience this. And I can't, I wish I could remember. It might've been Cake, but somebody, some musician that I was seeing was like, saw everybody with their phones, is like, everybody wants to capture, no one wants to experience. And I think that's one Absolutely. Thing that like this film was really hitting on the head really well with.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's all like a good amount of our podcasts kind of turn into, we get very existentialist. And just with these conversations, I really feel like going in a circle, we are kind of like at different stages, you know, like, I mean, Derek is out there doing stuff and stuff like that. I'm kind of like, feel like for myself, I'm finally on that ledge, you know, to step off of, you know, like with personal reasons in my life. I feel like I'm hoping to enter into that era, you know, era of my life now too. And then, you know, like, but and then with Alan, it's okay to like, not, you know, you can't, you just, you know, for multiple reasons, for myself speaking for personally, like it's not an easy world. Yeah. It's not an easy road, you know, to get to, especially for people, you know, Mexican Americans living in California.
It's not just, you know, like going out and traveling. That could be anything. Like this movie, it's travel for MIDI, but it doesn't have to be travel for everyone. Like it could be something as simple as starting a podcast with your friends about mm-hmm. movies, because that's something that I'm like really proud that like the three of us like did that, you know, with Fred at first, and now mm-hmm. like three of us like we all got together and we're like, this is something we've wanted to do. We've talked about doing, and we went out and we did it, and we haven't missed an episode. We've done it every other week since we started, and it's something we consistently put out that I'm very proud of all of us for doing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's for ourselves, you know. It's mm-hmm. like we were having a conversation earlier about, you know, like we are still, you know, in our infancy with this, and you know, but every other week, you know, we are releasing stuff that we're proud of, and that's what's most important, and at least for myself, is just like I'm always happy. This is always my best times, you know, is to come on and talk with you guys, and it's just, that's what's the most important thing. Yeah. Now.
Mm-hmm. And these times, you know, these very hard times with COVID and everything, so you know, I always look forward to it as well. It just sucks that sometimes, you know, just like Walter Mitty, life gets in the way, and you have family stuff or work or anything like that, where you're just like, I'm on the way, man. You got to get these things out of the way before, you know. But no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, and I really do believe a lot into the like Derek was seen with the snow leopard, where you know, I wish I can go to more concerts. That's one of my biggest regrets. I wish. The last couple of years before COVID, I was out there especially to see like the super hipster indie bands that I like.
That I listen what do you to see? Cut Copy, right, Alan?
I Shout love Cut Copy.
That was such a fucking good show.
Cut Copy, St. Lucia, they're all great. I love that show, was awesome. I think about that every other day. And but you know, when I go to those shows, I try not to take photos. Like I try and just go have a good time. I'll take photos of us outside. Like, you know, I used to smoke. So, you know, I would like gather everybody to follow me outside so I could have a cigarette and we could all talk and stuff. But now I quit. So, you know, like almost 5 years. Yeah, 5 years. Yeah, almost 5-6 years quitting cigarettes. So, but yeah, like that, those, I like taking photos when we're outside talking and we're talking about the experience. I feel like that's just such a more valid thing rather than, like, you know, because it's true nowadays, you know, there's people that are holding their phone up. Right now I'm holding my phone up as an example, and they're like they're kind of just staring at their phone, but they're but they're watching the show through their phone, where I'm like, dude, just put it down. Just put it down and enjoy it. I always think of this photo that came out about like 10 years ago, which is almost like a, you know, Sean Penn's character. I feel like Sean Penn's character would have took that photo as well. Of, I think it was like a parade or something, or some, I can't remember, but there was like a, you know, a fence, kind of like the silver metal fence things or whatever, like the bars. And I guess like a parade was going on or something, but the photo wasn't focused on the parade. It was focused on the people watching the parade. And it always stuck with me, and I always thought it was so wonderful, was that you saw all these young people, you know, it was my age as well, like their early 20s, and they were all just holding up their phone, just like I am right now. I'm holding up my phone, and they're kind of like, they're doing that face where their head's a little up, their nose is kind of pointing to the sky, but they're looking at their phone, and they're trying to take a photo of what's going on. And at the very end, of the picture, this is this little old lady. And this little old lady, she's just straight up just leaning on the fence, just enjoying the moment. Like, she has a big old smile on her face. And she's just watching it, and she's just chilling. Like, she's just staring at whatever's going on. Again, I think it's like a parade. But you just see that everybody, you know, she's on the far right, but everybody to the left is just on their phones, not really enjoying the experience. They're just trying to capture the experience. But just seeing that photo itself, just like Sean Penn's character in this film, is trying to be like, hey man, like, sometimes you don't have to take a photo. Sometimes you just gotta live in that moment. And I think that was one of the most powerful scenes in the film. And I fucking loved it. Where he's like, shh, be quiet, look at this. And like, he's staring at the snow leopard, and he's just like, take the photo, and gotta sit in that moment real fast. And that absolutely, like, just made me love the film. Like, it made me go, okay, you know, my melancholy is gone, fucking thrown out the window, because it was like, that's exactly what I love. Just living in that moment, experiencing it, and just enjoying it, man. Like, go ahead and take a photo, don't get me wrong, but take it quick, because it's gone. Just live in it, man. Like Sean Penn's character said, just, you know, take a photo if you have to, but just real quick, take that photo, put your phone down or put your camera down, whatever, and just experience it. Like, that's the most powerful part of the film. But go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. No, honestly, like, what you're saying, it kind of, there was one more point that I wanted to make, and I think what you were saying kind of segues really well into that. And I think one of the most impressive things about this movie is there's this whole kind of, like, mystery throughout the film of, like, what is this quintessence of life? What is this, like, picture that Sean Penn is gonna, like, has? And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, like, what could it possibly be that this thing, this ultimate picture that they're building up and up. And a lot of movies, you know, when they have something like that, they're not gonna show you at the end, because it's like, oh, this is, you know, it's impossible, because nobody's gonna agree on, like, this is the perfect thing. And they keep building it up. And then at the end, you know, with like 15 minutes left to go, you think, oh, we're never going to get to see that. And because, like, how could they pay that off? But then they're like, guess what? Here we are paying it off. And they pay it off at the last scene of the movie. And it's just so simple. It's just Walter. It's just, and it's like you were talking about, taking pictures, not of the show that you're watching, but of your friends, like, being at the show. And that quintessence of life at the end was Walter himself just kind of, like, looking, and just, it's like, you know, it says on the cover, like, life dedicated to the people who made it. And it's exactly what you're saying about, you know, having, it's not like about capturing a snow leopard. That's not the ultimate cover. The ultimate cover is just like the people around us, you know, and like Walter just being a person. And that it's amazing to me that they pulled that off and like built this thing up and then delivered on it. Like, that's what, like, really all these things in the end, like the whole thing with Sean Penn at the end, and then just like being like, yeah, this is the cover. It's about the life of Walter Mitty. And that was such a powerful moment and a powerful ending that they really just delivered on this thing that seemed like they wouldn't be able to. So it really hit me and just made, just, it was a perfect, just like little, just like mm-hmm. way to go out. Like there's no other way that it could end. It was mm-hmm. perfect for me.
Same here. I highly agree, man. Like, one of my favorite, you know, I know all of us are really big movie fans and we're always excited for, you know, our comic book adaptations. And another photo I'm trying to keep was one of my favorite things I saw of a promotional image was for Scott Pilgrim way back in 2010. I kind of read a couple of the first comics or the graphic novels. I think I read the first two at the time. And then I kind of like forgot about it. And they were like, hey, we're making Scott Pilgrim. And I was like, oh shit, okay, cool. And there's this promotional image. And that was it. It was just, they didn't show anything else. You know, you already know that this movie is going to be like video game heavy, anime inspired, and all. But what I loved is like, it was just showing the characters. Like, it was just showing all the characters in their costumes. And they were just leaning at the bar. And I'm assuming that scene was supposed to be the scene where Scott fights the first ex. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name at the time, but he's like the Indian
something
character.
Patel.
Yeah, Patel. Yeah, yes. Thank you. And it's all of them just hanging out. And I don't know why I absolutely love that image. Because, you know, yeah, they had like the weird hair, make the hair just like in the comic. And like, you know, like Ramona and Scott Pilgrim, especially like, weird hair, and it's kind of bushy and stuff. But they're in their early 20s and hips, you know, like me apparently. But I just absolutely love that. Like, I love that they were just kind of all just leaning and just looking forward at whatever was going on. I don't know why, but I love stuff like that. It's kind of like the Spielberg thing. Like mm-hmm. Spielberg, whenever he like that's his thing. Spielberg films is that. He captures the people looking at what's going on, just like in Jurassic or Alan Grant when he first sees the Brontosaurus, like right away when the owner of Jurassic Park shows him, he's like, "Oh, welcome to Jurassic Park," and he shows him the Brontosaurus, and he's looking, and the camera's not on them right away, it's on him, and he's looking up, and then just like, you know, every other Spielberg film, I don't know why, but I love that, of just people being at an event but enjoying themselves and loving what's going on. Just like that image of like Scott Pilgrim. Yes, I know it's a promotional image, but what I loved is that they were all staring and they all had this kind of like stern look of like, all right, shit's gonna go down, we're gonna fight, or Scott's gonna fight, or whatever. And it kind of hypes you, even though it doesn't show you what's going on. You kind of just look at their faces and you feel it. And I feel like this movie did a really good job of trying to like get people to understand that, to be like, hey man, it's not always what you're looking at. It's kind of what you're feeling mm-hmm. and experiencing kind of thing. But yeah, sorry. I'm like getting really, really like mm-hmm. way too in depth about like photography or anything. I'm not a photographer whatsoever, but I just love shots like that kind of thing. Yeah. But sorry. Go.
No, and to get kind of sappy, you know, like there's that one picture and it's from that time we all went bowling or whatever. And we were at downtown and like, we were like walking and I can't remember which one of us, but one of us took the picture and the other, it's like, you know, three of us were just kind of like walking up and you can tell by our body language that we're having a good time, you know, like, and that's like, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, we, you know, like we're having that moment together. You can see like our friendship between us, you know, you know, I was like, even though I'm like, oh man, you can kind of see my thinning hair in this. I'm like, I still fucking love that picture, you know?
Yeah. I took it because of that exact reason. I think it's on our Instagram. It's everybody's back towards the camera. They're just walking. Cause you know, I could have easily took a photo of us all bowling and smiling, being like, hey, we're bowling. But I was like, you know what? I like the before, I like the after. It's just kind of like,
it's a great shot, man. It's a great shot, honestly. Like, I think about that picture. Like, that's a fucking good picture.
And I really appreciate it because I just love stuff like that. Like, I've always been very keen about it, you know, because, like, me and Fred, for a time, we were amateur, like, cosplayer photographers. We'd take photos, and we both had kind of our differences where, like, he was very straightforward, and he's like, just do this. But I was always kind of like, you know, I'd be the type of person to, like, lay on the ground and just kind of, you know, fix the camera up and I'm like, do a pose or like look at me like you're going to strike me kind of thing. And I was like, I want to see that kind of emotion, or even just like kind of the lackadaisical thing about you. Like, I don't know. There's just something that shots that are not typical, I guess, I absolutely love. And that's what I loved about the movie, especially that final shot, because the whole time I was thinking, I was like, I thought it was going to be like kind of a little shitty take back where it's just going to be like nothing. Like the photo was going to be about water, or the photo was going to be like the piano or something. But when it was Walter, I was like, hats off to you, Sean Penn. I love it. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it's just such a beautiful movie. But with that, thank you everyone for joining me. Thank you, Alan and Derek, for watching this movie and enjoying it in your own certain ways.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry I went really hard into it, but
this is one of her favorite movies. Like, and she calls it my favorite thing is she calls it the MIDI. She's like, "Do you want to watch the MIDI?" I love the MIDI.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mrs. McDuff. With that, thanks everybody for listening. Hit that subscribe button on your podcasting app to make sure that you are always notified when a new episode of our show comes out, and to continue to hear us babble. And please, if you're willing to give us a rating and review, it really helps and lets us know what else you'd like to hear from us in this podcast. Because we can only get better with your help, as our motto is. Once again, we are the Undercast Company, and we have a couple of podcasts. I have a podcast called You've Never Seen ! Where at the beginning of each month, the first of each month, I invite a guest or guests on, and we discuss a movie that either ourselves or myself or my guests have never seen, but is considered a piece of pop culture or cinematic history. We got a good one coming up for October spooky month, spooky scary story month, that me and Derek have never seen, the original Halloween. So Alan, being our horror aficionado, is and having the flying the Halloween flag proudly all year round, as you can see in the video, he's going to be directing us through our first viewing of Halloween. And then besides that, now Marvel content is coming out, so we are doing a lot more of our Marvel podcast called Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones. Always super excited to talk about the Marvel Universe, the MCU, the big ol' MCU, possibly becoming Marvel Multiversal Universe. But
no way, really? That's a thing?
It's possible. They're having conversations about the name.
Just keep it clean. Keep it the MCU. Yeah. We don't need to get crazy here.
I agree. Keep it MCU, but you know what, man? The MMM...
The MMU?
MCU?
MMCU?
I'm okay with it, too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, thank you, everybody. Thanks for being amazing. And have a good rest of your day.
I'll see you in another life of Walter Mitty.
One last thing. Why is Adam Scott always a dickhead in every movie?
He plays such a good asshole. Oh my god. The one thing you would never watch that he's actually like a really cool guy and he's really good in it is Parks and Rec. He's great in Parks and Rec. Hate it, but like his character in that. Also, shout out to Catherine Hahn, who's so fucking weird and delightful, and oh my god, great cast.
All right, take it easy, everybody.
All right, bye.